Hello and welcome back to the Sleep Like a Baby podcast. I'm your host Hannah and I'm a mum living and working in Southeast London. And these are the short episodes, the nap time sessions, because my baby is indeed napping right now. So in today's deep dive or quick dive into a specific subject, I want to talk about the highly sensitive child, because this whole concept was a game changer for me. Just understanding what people meant when they said you have an orchid, it freed me up so much from this sense of guilt and responsibility, or like I was doing something wrong because I had a child who just seemed to need me more than other babies I knew needed their mums. And look, don't get me wrong, I feel like we have a bit of a cultural problem in the West with this assumption that babies are and should be more independent than they really are. So yes, it is completely normal for all babies to want to be close to their caregivers, to sleep best when they're in your arms, to need support around falling asleep, to all of those things, or just, you know, to have that need for closeness. That's not anything that needs a label or too much overanalysis into it. But there are also some babies who are just more sensitive, and they grow up to be more sensitive children, and they grow up to be possibly more likely a highly sensitive adult as well. And I think sometimes there's a crossover here with neurodivergence and sensitivity, and people kind of think that we're talking about the same things. And I would say that there is obviously going to be some overlap, because yes, some highly sensitive people are also on the autistic spectrum, or have ADHD, or you know, another layer to their situation, that the way their brain is wired is going to influence their sensitivity to certain stimuli and sensory experiences. But also, not every child who is highly sensitive is neurodivergent. And I really hope that people listening to this don't feel like there is any sense here of me saying that one is good or bad, or that neurodivergence is in any way bad or something we would be even worried about. You know, I'm very much of the belief that we should be embracing the differences between us and celebrating neurodivergent brains and accepting ourselves and our children for who we are. And I'm someone who has a lot of neurodivergence in my family and life, as we all do, actually. I think we're starting to wake up, aren't we, to this reality that actually our brains aren't as neurotypical as perhaps previous generations thought, and there is a lot of difference and diversity out there. So I'm very pro neurodivergence, I suppose, if that's a thing to say, you know, in the sense of accepting and celebrating and recognizing our differences, rather than trying to put neurodivergent people into a neurotypical mold and say that, you know, that neurotypical is the best way, and that if you're neurodivergent, you're outside, you're other, and you're wrong. But anyway, that's a bit of a tangent I wasn't prepared to go down. But I just wanted to clear that up, though, because sometimes when I talk about high sensitivity, people are saying, are you talking about autism? And are you diagnosing a child with autism or ADHD or sensory processing disorder or something? And of course, no, I'm not qualified to do that, certainly not via a podcast. And yes, some highly sensitive children are neurodivergent and some aren't. And so what I'm talking about today is just that high sensitivity, regardless of what is behind it. And the term was actually coined by a psychologist called Elaine Aron in the 90s. So that the highly sensitive person has existed for about 30 years now as a concept, as a framework for talking about certain personality types. And there are different estimates for how many people would fit into this category. So depending who you are reading, it's thought that highly sensitive people are thought to make up anywhere between 10 to 20% of the general population. Now, if you have a highly sensitive baby, it may be possible that you are also a highly sensitive person yourself, or your baby's other parent is. And so if you are interested about your own sort of diagnosis, for a lack of a better word, if you want to know, are you highly sensitive, then there is an online test you can do. So if you search for Aaron's highly sensitive person scale, and I can put that in the show notes, you can go through a questionnaire for yourself as well to see where you rate on that score. So highly sensitive people, or HSPs, as we can also call them, essentially have a sensory processing sensitivity trait. So this means essentially that they process sensory information more deeply than others. For example, you might have a child with strong emotional reactions, deep empathy, and a heightened awareness of their environment. So, for example, they might pick up on small changes to noise, sounds, smells, etc., or even just changes to a room. They might feel overstimulated quite easily. You might feel like a baby group, for example, for one child might be really great and lots of fun and a bit too much and need to get them out. And then for another, it is just sensory overload. They often have, or I suppose for adults as well, this applies more so, but a low tolerance for violence or conflict. So they might have a strong aversion to fighting or aggressive behavior around them. And they need a lot of, highly sensitive people need a lot of quiet or alone time to restore order internally. They tend to be very deep thinking and introspective people. They have a very deep, rich inner world, and they can be highly sensitive to criticism and prone to sort of overthinking and overanalyzing their environments. And then they're also characterized by having this sort of enhanced intuition and perception of the world around them, sensitivity to environmental factors, like I mentioned before, noise, bright lights, strong smells, etc., tastes. And then finally, high sensitivity is defined by a sense of high creativity and imagination. So yeah, that might be you. But what does that look like for a baby then? So I guess I touched a bit on that sensitivity to that, you know, going to a baby group and feeling like your little one is just overwhelmed immediately. But what a lot of people with highly sensitive babies say is that from a very early age, maybe the first few weeks or the first few months, you just feel like your child just needs that bit more from you. And like I say, babies do need us a lot. It is normal infant behavior to need a lot, but these babies want to be held. They want to be rocked. They want to feed a lot. They want a lot of sensory input from you. They pick up on noises from far away. They are aware of the textures and the experiences on their bodies. They are sensory seekers, but they also need a lot from you. They are quick to cry. Their cry might be louder, more urgent, more passionate than other babies. And again, it's difficult because to a mother particularly, your baby's cry also always sounds the most urgent. You know, we know that even from brain scans when they've played mother's sounds of babies crying, your own brain lights up in a way, you know, on a brain scan. Even if you don't know that that's your baby crying, your brain reacts more strongly to your child's cry than other babies crying. So we release cortisol anyway when we hear our children cry, but if you have a highly sensitive baby, you start to have a sense of your child being more passionate than the other babies, perhaps even as a tiny newborn. One framework I really like to use in terms of thinking about a child's temperament is the orchid and the dandelion concept. And you might have come across this before. Essentially, it's a term that was coined by a pediatrician and writer, Thomas Boyce, who basically kind of started to categorize kids into these very very sensitive orchids or a dandelion. So if we think about an orchid, they need quite specific circumstances in order to thrive in terms of temperature, water, soil, light. And what Boyce was looking at as a paediatrician was, why is it that he felt that some children were coming in to see him all the time with all of these ailments, and other children seemed just that bit more naturally resilient? And these were the dandelions. So a dandelion pretty much flowers wherever, you know, it's not as sensitive to its environment, and it can thrive in most circumstances, whereas some children, it felt like they just were that bit more sensitive. And what he found as well was that it wasn't just temperamental, this sensitivity, this orchid characteristic, but they also tended to have particular health conditions. It's like their entire being was more sensitive to illness, more sensitive to nervous system dysregulation, more sensitive to the world. And they felt everything more deeply. And I think it's such an interesting way to think about it. And then there's some people who've come back since and said, you know, there's a third category here, a tulip, if you will. You know, they're sort of in the middle. They're children that are slow to warm and a bit sensitive, but they're not quite at orchid level. You know, so they kind of can be a bit of a dandelion, can be a bit of an orchid, just in the middle. And I suppose that reminds us, doesn't it, that as ever, these things exist on a spectrum, and that it's not about putting a child into a box and saying, you are this and will always be this, and therefore we are only going to treat you in a specific way. Instead, it's just about using particular frameworks and understanding how certain children are different. And something you might have with a highly sensitive baby is often they are referred to as these sort of colicky, high needs children. And colic is a difficult one. And I'm going to do another episode all about colic and reflux and allergies, because sometimes there is a physical reason why a child is really unsettled, really hard to put down. And sometimes you can have a highly sensitive baby with an allergy or with a reflux issue and a tongue tie and tension in their body. And it's all together. And that's obviously going to be harder to sort of unpick. And you might be chasing this idea that, oh, well, if I could just get the reflux sorted, then my child will cry less and be sort of easier to put down and need me less. And then sometimes what happens is we kind of go through that process. And of course, we want our children to be comfortable and healthy. So I'm not saying don't do that. But we sort of chase that, and then we might achieve that kind of comfort and work out the root cause of the reflux or the allergy, and your child is still just that sensitive little soul because that is who they are. And I think that sort of radical acceptance can actually be extremely freeing and give you actually a sense of relief and peace, because it means it's actually not your responsibility to, you know, so-called fit, you know, fix a baby if they do just need you a lot. That is just who they are, that's where they're at, and that is their temperament. And you haven't created a rod for your own back. If your baby loves being carried all the time, again, it can be totally normal, but for an orchid child, you're probably going to have them live in a sling, and they're going to feed a lot, and they're going to just seek out so much closeness and need your smell and need your touch and need your warmth. And it might be little things like getting them out of the bath might be the absolute end of the world, because for them, that high sensitivity means going from the warm water, even just to a warm room, might feel so different and so overwhelming that they just need to express that raw emotion and need you to co-regulate with them. And remember, that's how we all develop our ability to self-soothe. It is by being soothed by others. And when I say self-soothe, I'm not talking about putting yourself to sleep at night. I'm talking about genuine calming yourself down, of using your brain to go from a state of heightened emotion to calm independently. That is what self-soothing is. And it's something that as adults, lots of us struggle with. After all, the brain doesn't stop growing until we're 25. So it takes a long time for our brain and that prefrontal cortex to fully develop and be able to regulate ourselves. And until we can regulate ourselves, we need that co-regulation from another caregiver. We need someone to bounce and shush and kiss and hum and jiggle and soothe to help us go from that heightened state into back into that calm state again. And so if you have a highly sensitive baby, you might feel like it's always you that is the one rocking. They won't just sit on your lap in a cafe. You're working hard to keep them in that sort of state of calm, regulated, contented state. Instead, they might just be a bit more reactive. And I just want to say to you, if you are that parent of that sensitive soul, you haven't done anything to create that. You're not making a rod for your own back. You're not creating a dependency. They are just more sensitive. So remember, if you are co-sleeping because you have a child, a baby, a toddler, who feeds a lot at night, who wakes frequently, who really needs you, that's okay. You are just meeting them where they are right now. People will tell you they wake a lot because you're always there, but it's not. You're not co-sleeping to create more wakes. You're co-sleeping because they wake and because they need you. And that's all right. That's normal for some babies, for up to 20%. One thing I will say though, if you have a highly sensitive baby, it is essential. This is crucial that you look after yourself. Do not overlook your own needs as a parent as a result of taking care of another very needy little person. So if you are getting touched out, overwhelmed, dysregulated because you are wearing your baby 24/7, you are not getting physical space, you are not a bad parent for saying, I need a break, and your baby will be okay. Ask for help. Don't struggle alone. If you're feeling touched out, do things for you, whether that is a bit of 20 minutes of exercise or in a bath on your own or going for a walk. Really be intentional with it. Schedule it in. Don't skip it, and make sure your own needs for space are met. Because like I say, if you are a highly sensitive person yourself, it's quite possible you have a highly sensitive baby and you're going to need to look after your own needs. And sometimes we don't realize we are highly sensitive people until we become parents ourselves and then have all of our normal coping mechanisms, at which we have as sort of single individual adults without children to look after, they disappear, they evaporate overnight. So come back to that. Think about what you used to do in your life pre-kids and be disciplined with your own self-care in that way. And also, I suppose I'm talking a lot about the negative or the difficult sides of having a highly sensitive child, where there might be more illness or more or less sleep or, you know, more physical caregiving required of you. But I wanted to finish actually on the positives of having an orchid child. It is an incredible gift. People with high sensitivity are our most empathetic, kind, creative, emotionally intelligent people in our communities. These are, sorry, my one-year-old's joined us, nap finished. I wanted to wrap this up. They are gems, they are jewels. Think about that orchid. They are beautiful flowers. And yes, we have to be more, or maybe not more, but we have to be very aware of how we support their sensory needs and their individual high sensitivity. And sometimes that can come with these big meltdowns, these big feelings, this kind of overwhelm. But they are also magic and special, just as every child is. But orchids, it's a lot of intense work. But it's also a lot of joy and intense, intense love and happiness and magic. So I'm just going to leave it there. And as ever, thank you so much for listening. If you want to find out more about me and you don't always already follow me, I'm at Little Nest Sleep on Instagram and TikTok. Thanks so much. Bye.